If you stayed up until about 2:30 this morning or have learned the results of yesterday's elections, you know that nationally, at least, a number of people were very surprised by both the victory of Donald Trump and, to a lesser extent, the composition of the U.S. Senate. Here in North Carolina, the results may not have been as surprising, but they did reinforce the strength of the overall Republican gains. On today's Coastline, we'll talk about the reason for those gains and why they surprised so many people. I'm Cleve Callison. I'm sitting in today for Rachel Lewis Hilburn, who was working late into the night, Tuesday night and early Wednesday morning, and taking a well-deserved rest. So I welcome you to join our Wednesday conversation for the next hour. My guests today are Richard Poole, chair of the New Hanover County Democratic Party. Welcome, Richard.
Thank you. Welcome.
And his counterpart is Michael Franklin, chair of New Hanover County Republican Party. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you for having me.
Glad to have you both here. And I welcome our audience to join in our Wednesday conversation for the next hour. We'd like to hear from you. I'm sure that a lot of people have something that they want to ask or to say. Let us hear from you with your emails to coastline@whqr.org or give us a call at any time at 910-343-1138. We'd like to know what you think the biggest surprises of yesterday's election were, what the results may mean for us here in North Carolina, and especially on the Carolina coast. How did the polls miss the victory of Donald Trump? And what do you want to see our newly elected winners do? So now is your chance to talk with our guests. Remember that number, 910-343-1138, or an email to coastline@whqr.org. So, Richard and Michael, let me just start out with kind of a basic question here. How much sleep did y'all get last night?
I did okay.
Richard?
Yeah, I got a full night's sleep. Was in bed probably around 11:30.
I wish
11:30? Wow.
I wish I did that better. I was about 4 hours. Got to bed just after 3.
Okay. Well, thank you both for being here. We really appreciate it. What, if anything, surprised you? I'm sure there must be something. What surprised you the most? Let's start with Michael on that.
I think one of my big surprises was the Trump and McCrory. I saw Trump pull. I would have figured that Governor McCrory would have pulled ahead with him. I know there's still provisional ballots out there, so we'll see how that turns out. But that was probably my biggest surprise of the night.
Okay. And Richard, what about you?
The biggest Trump was surprise was Donald Trump's apparent win, you know, and the fact that all the predictive models, all the polls, everything that we look at to try to figure out what's happening in an election, they were all wrong.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll be talking about that today, and actually that touches on a little bit of what's going to happen tomorrow in Coastline on our Thursday edition. Because the topic for tomorrow's program is going to be the media and the changing role of the media and how looking at things like the decline of traditional media in favor of social media and other forms of information gathering. Let me just ask both of you just to sort of get started an orientation question here. Obviously, this is not a full-time job for either of you, right? What do you do in civilian life?
Go ahead, Richard.
Go ahead, Richard.
I'm an attorney. I do estate planning. And do a lot of planning for parents of special needs kids.
Okay. Very good. Michael?
I work in finance and compliance for Guilford Mills, a textile company based here.
Okay. Very good. Well, thank you both. I think actually we already have a caller on the line. This is Greg from Wilmington, and he has a question about the work of the new legislature. Greg, welcome to WHQR's Coastline. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I love the program, and thank the three of you for the jobs that you do.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I enjoy it. My question has to do with the new legislature and certificate of need law. I was wondering, is that going to be one of the first priorities that they work on?
One of you try to tackle that?
I'm not familiar enough with where that's at in the legislature to address that.
I couldn't address it either. Sorry, Greg.
Greg, could you briefly explain what a certificate of need law is
do? Well, yes. Is my understanding right now, you have to get the equivalent of a permission slip if you want to start a business, and primarily my focus is in the medical field. My wife has just recently finished a chemotherapy, and there aren't a number of places that have the equipment, number one, to diagnose, number two, to, you know, go ahead and follow through with the procedures. And medical costs, you know, once you meet your deductible, are pretty well taken care of, but it's that meeting the deductible, and this was something that wasn't planned, obviously.
Okay. But, well, you know what? This actually sounds like a good topic for a future Coastline when we have a legislator here. I think none of the three of us is very well versed in that matter, or what the likelihood of it passing in the legislature is.
Well, it's basically an all-encompassing blanket sort of law that if you owned, each of you owned a hamburger place on any given intersection, and I wanted to go in and fill the fourth corner, I would have to apply for and show a certificate of need so that I could go ahead and start my hamburger business.
Okay. Well, Greg, we thank you for the question. I don't think we're going to be able to tackle it today, but we do thank you for the question, and thank you for listening to Coastline. That's Greg from Wilmington, and we're talking with Richard Poole from the North New Hanover County Democrats and Michael Franklin from the Republicans. This is sort of a question, I guess, for Michael. Is the Republican presence in local offices, which seems kind of reinforced by the results that we saw last night, is that strong enough that Republican Party could basically go it alone, or is there a need for bipartisan cooperation?
I think there's always a need for bipartisan cooperation. Even within your own party, not everyone agrees. And you do better if everyone can get together and come up with a solution versus one party just steamrolling everything through the legislature.
Mm-hmm. Richard, your thoughts about that?
Well, I agree. I think our county would be better if there was more representation from Democrats. But in the final analysis, we do need to work together to make our community work.
Mm-hmm. An example might be the composition of the county commission, because even though there has been a personnel change, I mean, Pat Cusack was elected, and for those of you who hadn't heard, Woody White was the top vote getter, followed by Pat Cusack, and then Jonathan Barfield close behind that, and those were the top three. So one Democrat and two Republicans. So the composition of the county commission will change. Will stay the same in terms of party affiliation. And I saw Pat on television this morning talking about the desire to cooperate and work with others on issues of common concern. So at least people are saying the right things. We believe those are the right things. Let's go to another call here. You're listening to Coastline at WHQR. Our phone number is 910-343-1138. Let me bring the line in here. Let's say hello to Alex from Hampstead. Alex, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Very well.
Doing well.
All right. I got a question for the Democratic chair. We lost the House, the Senate, the presidency. What do we do now?
Well,
should
good I take
question.
That?
Yes, sir. Richard, that's for you.
I think the first thing to do is recognize that we did make some gains in this election. We elected a governor, Roy Cooper, by a narrow margin. There may be a recount, but there's reason to think that he'll survive the recount. We elected a Supreme Court justice, Mike Morgan, an African-American man who will be the only African-American male in the appeals court or the Supreme Court. His election shifted the balance on the North Carolina Supreme Court from Republican to Democrat, and it will remain that way for 6 years if nobody resigns. We elected an attorney general, Josh Stein. That's an important job in our state government. So it's not all bleak, but Looking at the federal elections, yeah, they're disappointing. And it's possible that with the Republican control of all branches of government, that there will be a backlash. And when that happens, I think Democrats need to stand ready to support the candidates that share their values.
Do you think the backlash that you're talking about, is that what we saw last night? Because for the last 2 years, we've had Republican governor, Senate, and House.
I think it was a change election. You know, our county, New Hanover County, voted for Governor Cooper, Supreme Court Justice Mike Morgan. It voted for Josh Stein, and it voted for Donald Trump. What do those people have in common? I think not much. But
so then how do you explain the disparity there of the vote?
I think it was a change election. People felt that Governor McCrory had failed or made serious errors in a number of areas, and they wanted a change. And with Donald Trump, I think clearly he's a change candidate. You can talk about whether it's the kind of change we want or need, but he's clearly a change candidate.
Yeah, let me get Michael's reaction to that question. I mean, to his comment about a change election and the reason for this split vote here in the county.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm not really sure what to make of it, but again, we did the same thing with Obama and McCrory 4 years ago. We went the opposite way. We selected Obama for the state and McCrory for the governor. So it's interesting, and I'm not really sure what to make of that.
Well, maybe it's just that people aren't inclined to vote party line or the straight ticket all the time. Are there enough people who won't do that that will make that difference? We're going to have to take a short break, and we'll be back with the chairs of the New Hanover County Republican and Democratic parties on this edition of Coastline. Our number is 910-343-1138. We'd love to have your questions about yesterday's election and about the political parties in our region. 343-1138. It's 18 minutes after the hour.
At 19 minutes after noon, you're tuned to Coastline on your public radio station, HQR News 91.3 FM. Coming up after Coastline, listen for the state of things at 1.
Support for WHQR comes from our members and St. James Artisans, presenting their annual holiday boutique November 11th and 12th at Marker 614 in downtown Southport, including original art and crafts from over 70 local artisans. More at stjamesartisans.com. And from Alan Swart of Heartland Payment Systems, entrepreneurs serving entrepreneurs. Recognizing the contributions of Link Incorporated, helping educate and motivate youth to make positive choices. Information on Heartland available at 297-9079. And from UNCW Office of the Arts, in collaboration with Kukaloris, presenting Manual Cinema, Ada Ava, with vintage overhead projectors and multiple screens, Friday, November 11th at 7:30 p.m., uncw.edu/presents.
This Monday evening at Prologue, Ben Steelman of the Star News talks to Sunday Times and USA Today best-selling author Diane Chamberlain about her book Pretending to Dance. That takes place at WHQR at 7 this Monday evening. Discover more at whqr.org. It's 12:20.
Welcome back to Coastline on WHQR. Our topic today is an evaluation and a look at yesterday's election results. Our guests are Michael Franklin, from the chair of New Hanover County Republican Party, and Richard Poole, the chair of the New Hanover County Democratic Party. And just before we went to break, we do have some calls on the line, and we will encourage others to make a call right now to 910-343-1138. But we want to get to a couple of things that came up just before that break. And one was the governor's race, which looks like it's heading for a recount, right? It's a very close, I think, 5,001 or something like that.
Votes, yes.
All that separates Cooper from McCrory. Is that an automatic process, or does the person behind have to request a recount?
I believe it's automatic. If they request it, they can waive it.
I think, yeah. I think that's right.
They can decide not to have it, but it's automatically available.
And you're saying it's available during the break. You're saying it's available when there's a difference of, what, 1% between the winner and the runner-up?
Correct.
Okay. That's my understanding.
And in this race, this it's much narrower than that. It's like 5,000. It's 0.1% or something.
Exactly.
Correct.
Okay. Well, do you imagine that McCrory will ask for that or not do the waiver?
I'm not sure. I haven't spoken to the campaign. I think it's definitely going to come down to we'll know by the end of next week once all of our provisional ballots have been counted, and we'll see where that margin fluctuates. I think if he can close the gap, it definitely will be. But that's for his campaign to decide.
Mm-hmm. Do provisional ballots and absentee ballots and things usually have a large effect on the vote counting?
I would say not usually, but you never know. This is a different election. Nobody saw any of this coming. Okay. So I haven't seen numbers.
My belief is that the provisional ballots tend to break Democratic. So, and if that's true, then that process will result in the gap between McCrory and Cooper widening, lessening the likelihood that a recount would be successful.
Mm-hmm. But we should know within, what, a couple of weeks? Is that?
I hope so.
Hope so. Hope we don't have a Florida situation from
Absolutely.
The year 2000. I don't think anybody wants that. Let's go to let's see here. We think we are speaking to Doc from Wilmington. Doc, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Thank you. I'm enjoying this program. My question is really for both of your guests. What effect what opinion do they have on the effect of Roy Cooper now becoming the governor as it relates to the repeal of the HB 2 bill? I know I'm a registered Republican, but I went out of my way to vote for Roy Cooper and encourage every Republican I knew to vote for Roy Cooper simply because I detest that bill so much. And I'm wondering if it's going to have any meaningful effect if this election is going to have any meaningful effect about getting that repealed.
Okay, Doc, thank you for your question. Let's go to Michael.
I think that's going to fall to the House now. We'll see what they feel about the results of Cooper being elected so far. And that's going to definitely be a decision that they're going to have to decide between themselves and see if they can repeal it.
Overall, there really wasn't much change in either the House or the Senate, was there, as a result of yesterday's election?
That's correct.
Was there any shift at all in the number of Democrats versus Republicans in either chamber?
I don't believe so. I haven't even gotten a chance to look at the totals. I was just following a few races, but I think we still hold a vast majority of all the seats.
That's my impression, yeah. And, of course, it would have to originate from the legislature. This is not something the governor can do himself.
Correct.
Yeah.
Well, let me put a footnote on that, and that's that I believe there's pending litigation concerning HB 2 related to constitutionality and whether it conflicts with federal laws, and that could affect the legislature's judgment about whether to keep it or get rid of it.
Mm-hmm. Presumably, if they were to repeal it, Cooper would be behind that, I would think.
Yeah, that was his campaign strategy, so I
would
assume so.
He campaigned against it. Okay. Very good. Thank you for your question, Doc. We appreciate it. And we have another question here. Our phone number, by the way, is 910-343-1138. Talking with Richard Poole, chair of North Carolina, or rather New Hanover County Democrats, and Michael Franklin, his counterpart, chair of the Republican Party. And we have John from Wilmington. John, welcome to good WHQR's Coastline. You're on the air.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Sure.
I'm a younger gentleman, and I think the election of Donald Trump really speaks to the moral decay, if you will. Because the way I see it, the things he got away with saying and not releasing his tax returns, people don't really care about that stuff anymore. And I find that interesting because I was looking at older campaigns and the history of those, and like, I remember George Bush the First looked at his watch during the debate, and that was considered a huge gaffe because it looked like, oh, he doesn't care about people and stuff like that. So I just find it really interesting how things change and what people have come to accept over time.
Okay, John, thank you for the comment. Did you have a question for either of our guests?
No, that's it. I'm sorry.
Okay. No, don't apologize. That's
Thanks
fine.
For sharing that.
Thank you. It certainly is the case that it has been very, very different. Many of the things that we had accepted as sort of the norms of campaigning have been turned upside down, and it remains to be seen whether these are going to be permanent or permanent part of our political life, or we'll go back to the old ways, or what?
I certainly hope not.
Well, as they say,
I hope that it's not a permanent change.
As they say, we'll see. You're listening to Public Radio, WHQR. I had a question for you to go back to our discussion about the judiciary. And I know, Michael, you're going to have to leave in a few minutes, so I want you to be part of this one mm-hmm. also. You mentioned that the balance of power, now that Mike Morgan has been elected, Richard, you mentioned that it was going to shift from Republican to Democrat. I guess that's going to be a 4-3 split, but only now it's going to break in the other direction. Are either of you concerned about judicial races becoming partisan affairs?
I think they've always been partisan. Now you're seeing it more, especially on the Court of Appeals, where you see the
affiliation
of the judges. I'd like to see politics stay out of that, but I feel like politics is creeping into every part, every aspect of our lives these days. So the judiciary is next, I assume.
Okay, that's Michael Franklin from the New Hanover County Republicans. Richard, your thoughts on that?
I think the judicial races have become more partisan. Republican judicial candidates tend to brand themselves as conservatives. Why a political ideology is relevant to selecting a judge is unclear to me, or maybe I should say I just think that's wrong. I think a judge should pledge to be fair and objective and to apply the law and to the facts. And none of those things is either conservative or liberal. It's just being a good judge. So the conservative brand calls into question in my mind whether that judge is doing the job that we elected him to do.
This being North Carolina, you don't see someone like Mike Morgan saying, "Look, me, I'm a liberal," so it doesn't work the other way around.
Absolutely not.
You're listening to Public Radio's Coastline here on WHQR, and the phone number for your calls and questions is 910-343-1138. I'm Cleve Callison, sitting in today for Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. Let's say hello to the next caller. This is Tori from Wilmington. Tori, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Thank you so much. My question is for Richard. Richard, you mentioned earlier that New Hanover County elected Mike Morgan, Roy Cooper, and Donald Trump, and you asked what they had in common, and I would just point out that they're male. I wonder if that might have had anything to do with tilting the election in New Hanover County in Trump's favor.
Anybody want to tackle that, Richard?
I really don't know. I hadn't looked at it through that filter. It's certainly true that they're all male. What do you think, Tori?
I truly think that there are some people who voted for Trump who would have voted for Clinton if she had been male with the same qualifications.
What was the vote in New Hanover County in the Senate race, Burr versus Ross? Do we know?
I can't give you numbers, but it was not close. It was like, I want to say, 50 to 45.
If something like that. 5-6 points.
In favor of Burr?
In favor of Burr.
Okay. So there's another mail for you. Tori, thanks very much for your comment. We appreciate it. I guess Tori is gone. If Cooper does become governor, to go back to the question about the recount, how do you think his relationship with the General Assembly will go? Michael?
I hope it goes well. I hope they can learn to work together. They've got 4 years of each other, or especially two for most of the assembly. It's time to put the politics behind and get back down to work. North Carolina's still got a long way to go. We're moving in the right direction, but I'd like to see us keep on going.
What sorts of things do you think are going to be part of the Republican agenda now when you said they're lots of things to do and a long way to go. What would you see as coming out of the legislature?
I still think we're still looking at teacher pay increasing. We're still looking at saving up that rainy day fund, getting the state back on firm footing so we're ready to weather the next storm.
Okay. Let's say hello to the next caller. This is Ellen. Let me see if I can get her on the line here. This is Ellen from Ocean Isle. Ellen, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Thank you very much. My question has to do with the hate talk that we heard from Donald Trump over the campaign and the fear that he developed in the breakdown of our democratic process. That whole idea has taken over in a lot of places in Europe, and because of that fear, a lot of people have looked for a very strong leader, which can lead to things we don't want to see in a democratic country. What can the general public do? How can we assure that that process doesn't continue and the fear of our democracy continue? Thank you.
Okay, Ellen, thank you for your call. Richard Poole, let's have you take a stab at that.
I think we've got to be able to talk to each other across party lines in a civil, respectful manner, respecting the differences between us. We need to find solutions, and that's our bulwark against the sort of authoritarian government that you are concerned about, and I am too.
Michael?
We're all concerned about that kind of government, but I think that's a strong leap to start comparing Trump to some of those dictators that I assume that's who she's talking about. But what we can do as the general public is to stay informed. There's a lot of uneducated voters out there that just watch the media and go. They don't do their research on the candidates. And I think that's how you stay informed and you stay vigilant and you watch for the signs.
This has been, frankly, a pretty tough election for a lot of people. There was some strong language from both sides. There were apocalyptic predictions of what might happen if candidate X was to be elected. And I know, and I've talked to a lot of people who've had to do things like unfriend people on Facebook because just the level of discourse and things like that had gotten too great. Let me ask, do both of you either have friends or work with people on the other side of the party, and has that put a strain on those kinds of relationships, this very tough campaign?
I have friends on both sides of the aisle, and I think what we've just learned is how to have a polite conversation. Everything doesn't have to go to the 10th degree immediately, that as long as you just stay respectful or don't discuss it and you just talk about what you have in common, you're better off than starting to just pick fights.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the don't discuss it is something I've seen people having a lot, because sometimes it seems the positions are so polarized there's not much hope that you're going to convince the other person of your side, so you might as well just sidestep the question. Richard, same question to you.
Well, personally, I don't pick my friends or reject them because of their political views. I care more about their character and how they treat other people. And although I've been avoiding talking to some of my friends in this political season, I expect to get back to them right soon.
Well, you two must run into each other fairly frequently. You were talking about the vote walk.
The run for the polls.
For the polls. Is that the sort of activity that maybe can help address some of these things and build some bridges?
I think that's a good example. We were both there at UNCW for Dr. Brubaker's run for the polls, and it was a great event. Everybody was very cordial. I saw the candidates on both sides of the aisle all addressing each other, talking to each other. I think definitely that's a move in the right direction.
And it does seem to me, I don't know if you would agree, that the level of angst and vitriol is lessened the farther down or the closer you get to localism. I mean, it's one thing to be mad at the head of the ticket, the person on the other side, but it's another to be mad at somebody that you see a lot. You know,
it's hard. I feel like it's hard to do that when you know you're going to run into them at the grocery store, and especially here in Wilmington. That's a very good possibility.
Yeah, very good. You're listening to Public Radio's Coastline here on WHQR, and we are taking your calls and questions at 910-343-1138. And I will say also, Michael is going to have to leave at our next break, which is coming up in just a few more minutes. So if you have a question for Michael, go ahead and let us hear from about that now. Richard will be with us for the remainder of this hour. Michael, since you are about to leave, I'll ask you this. What is next? What's in terms of organization and outreach or whatever it is that you're going to be focused on, what are going to be the priorities for the County Republican Party as we go forward?
I think the next is we saw some record numbers turn out at early voting, and to just reach out to those groups that haven't voted lately and to see why they became involved this time and see if we can keep them involved.
Where do you think – do you have a description of sort of where your core voters came from or
I don't. I
the
think
bulk
I
of your support?
I don't, and that's the kind of the piece that's a bit curious is I'd like to see what that is. I haven't had a chance to dump the numbers, see which precincts pulled out versus who didn't vote in the last couple elections. So we definitely have some digging to do.
You know, a few weeks ago, the polls were predicting a big turnout and a big victory, maybe even a landslide for Hillary Clinton, and obviously that didn't happen. And I heard a lot of discussion on the national level about Republicans returning back, you know, after having put some distance in some cases between themselves and Donald Trump, they came back for that. Were you seeing maybe that kind of phenomenon here?
I definitely see that. And also we had a lot of Republicans disenchanted with the party after the last presidential election and moved out of the Republican affiliation. So I'd like to see which of those came back, I guess, home to say back to the core of what they used to believe in or used to follow in and see where they are now.
Mm-hmm. Several years ago, of course, Donald Trump used to be a Democrat, and he made some statements that probably Republicans at the time wouldn't have agreed with. Do you feel that this is going to move the Republican Party a little bit more toward the right, toward a more conservative stance, or will it go the other direction and maybe be a little bit more toward the center and try to include some of those people on the other side? Which way do you see that going?
I'm not sure. I think it's definitely going to – people are going to start taking candidate by candidate basis. Donald Trump's a great example of that. He's not what we would call our typical Republican candidate. But people came out and voted for him. They like the idea that he's challenging the media, challenging the status quo. So we'll see how that turns out for us.
Okay. I want to very quickly take a call here from Brooks in Hampstead. Excuse me, Bill in Hampstead. Bill, welcome to Coastline. You're on there. But please make your call quick.
How much impact do you think it had on Republicans being listed first on the ballot? The reason I'm saying that is Josh Stein is a strong candidate, won narrowly. Ingram was a strong insurance commissioner, was defeated. Same thing on education. And the comment is, I don't think Cooper's going to win because of HB2. I think he's going to win because of the association with the governor and Duke, and there's a big dissatisfaction with the association of concentration of wealth and concentration of power.
Okay, well, thank you very much for that comment, Bill. That's going to have to do with it. Yeah, did the listing party affiliation first, was that true across the board, or was that just in judicial races?
That is true.
That is true.
Whoever holds the governor's house is listed first.
Post them first. Okay. Well, Michael Franklin, chair of the Republican Party of New Hanover County, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank
I know
you
had to go.
Me. I enjoyed it.
Appreciate having you with us here. Richard Poole from the Democrats will be with us for one more section of today's Coastline. Our number is 910-343-1138, and we'll be back.
At 20 minutes before 1 o'clock, this is your public radio station, HQR News, 91.3 FM. 20 minutes from now, listen for the state of things, followed by Here and Now at 2.
Support for WHQR comes from our members and King Post Design and Construction, designing and building custom homes in southeastern North Carolina for over 20 years, with a commitment to satisfying clients and leaving a legacy for the next generation. Learn more at kingpostbuilders.com. And from Pinpoint Restaurant, at 114 Market Street in downtown Wilmington, serving dinner 6 days a week and brunch on weekends. Menu online at pinpointrestaurant.com. and from Tidal Creek Co-op, Wilmington's community grocery store and source for natural, fresh, organic, and local foods. 5329 Oleander Drive or tidalcreek.coop.
At this time tomorrow on Coastline, we'll explore why trust in the media has fallen throughout this election cycle. Is it deserved? And how can news organizations rebuild their credibility? That's the topic on Coastline tomorrow from noon until 1 here on HQR News 91.3 FM. HQR News time is 12:42.
Welcome back to Coastline here on WHQR. I'm Cleve Callison, sitting in today for Rachel Lewis-Hilburn, and our topic is a look at the election of 2016, obviously a very dramatic, possibly even history-making election, and one that a lot of people were involved in and contained plenty of surprises. Our guest for the remainder of this show is Richard Poole, who is chair of the New Hanover County Democrats. And Michael Franklin, who was here for the first part of the show, has had to leave and sends his regrets. But we'll continue on with Richard. And if you have a question for Richard, please give us a call at 910-343-1138. And we'll be glad to talk with you here on this edition of Coastline. I was wondering, Richard, what lessons do you think the Democrats should take away after these results? You had mentioned a couple of things that were reasons for optimism from your standpoint, such as the apparent victory of Roy Cooper in the governor's race and Mike Morgan and on the Supreme Court. But in a lot of ways, particularly at the national level, but in many other local races, there didn't seem to be much of a shift toward the Democrats. So what are the lessons that you think the Democratic Party will take away from this election?
Well, it was a change election, and it's actually, at least since World War II, been very uncommon for a two-term president to be followed by yet another president from their same political party. Mm-hmm. George Bush following Ronald Reagan was an exception, but he was a one-term president. So from a historical point of view, what Hillary Clinton was trying to do was a hard thing to do. But for us as Democrats, I think we need to stick to our knitting. We need to support our candidates. We need to encourage new candidates. We need to expand our coalition. This year, for the first time ever, New Hanover Democrats printed a sample ballot in Spanish. I mean, our Spanish voting population is very small, but we need to reach out to them. And we need to reach out to the Bernie Sanders voters, some of them, many of them not previously involved in politics, and encourage them to remain involved and encourage them to be a part of our coalition.
I know our topic today was local races rather than the national, but since you are in this position of working with the party officially, do you think this is going to move the Democratic Party farther to the left, or will it maybe move tack a little bit more to the center in the next 4 years? Gaze into your crystal ball and tell me what you think will happen.
I think the party moved some to the left in this presidential year. The next 4 years, I mean, are not going to be like this year, and I think Democrats need to tell voters that we're the party that wants to make government work and make it work for everybody.
2 years from now, there are not going to be a presidential, gubernatorial, or a Senate race in North Carolina. And usually, particularly in a presidential year, there's greater turnout, particularly if there are other races on the ballot as there were this time. So is that good or bad for the Democratic Party?
Well, historically, off-year elections have been difficult for Democrats. It's going to be important to remind them how much is at stake. In 2020, we'll be having another census and a redistricting. And it's an opportunity, if Democrats make gains in the legislature, to eliminate some of the gerrymandering that's caused our elections to be so polarized.
I want to mention something. This is kind of, I guess you could call this a little bit of a preview of tomorrow's Coastline. We're going to have a program about a fairly related topic, which is media and the role of media. And this one sort of came home to me. I'll mention this because this was a result of a correspondence that I had with a listener, an email correspondence that I had. They're going to look at the topic tomorrow of declining trust in the media. And I've been exchanging emails with a listener on just this topic with specific reference to the presidential race. And he had written this for Friday Feedback, but since our feedback segment is designed really for topics relating to WHQR's operations and it's not for airing political viewpoints as such, I explained that I thought that the better vehicle for his views would be Coastline or a program like this. So let me read a quote from what this correspondent had to say. If Donald Trump receives the majority of votes, and of course this was written before the election, and Trump did receive the electoral votes, we really don't know yet about the popular vote. At any rate, the writer says, that will mean that most Americans really don't like Hillary Clinton. It will also mark the end of an era where the truth has been filtered through predominantly left-leaning news outlets like NPR. Despite all of your efforts to prop up the Clintons, they are who they are, power-hungry, corrupt politicians who gain their wealth through political means. Well, first of all, I would disagree with the notion that WHQR, or for that matter NPR, has consciously or unconsciously been trying to, quote, prop up, unquote, Hillary Clinton. But that comment does speak to a rather profound distrust in the mainstream media, which is obviously shared by a lot of people, especially ones who voted yesterday. And my correspondent then went on to say, if you don't recognize that your news filter has become clogged, your swamp will eventually be drained by necessity. And he ended with this comment, good luck in the era of new media. And as I hear that, I mean, there's language there, obviously, Richard, that echoes the words of Donald Trump talking about, in reference to WHQR, talking about draining the swamp. Now, admittedly, our roof leaked when the hurricane came through, but, you know, I wouldn't describe us as a swamp. But that language is the sort of ferocity of that language seems to have characterized a number of things that have happened this year. To what do you attribute that?
Well, it's a trend that has been going on for years, you know, at least on the Republican side. Attacking the media has been a very popular way to campaign. It's really become part of the accepted wisdom on that side. I think Democrats in general are less suspicious of the media, and they recognize that having fact-based media actually counts. Talk radio often isn't fact-based, and social media—
Well, present company accepted.
Present company accepted. But, you know, you have, on the Republican side, conservative talk radio hosts becoming vice presidential candidates. That's where Mike Pence came from. You don't see that so much on the Democratic side.
You're right. I'm trying to think if there is somebody like that. I'm having a tough time calling it up. But is that kind of fragmentation and everybody his own arbiter of the truth, is that likely to get better or worse, do you think?
I don't know. I look at social media, and even among people who are Democrats, I see them seizing on things they find on the internet as fact, which are clearly not facts. They're made-up stuff. And it's really made it more difficult to have a coherent discussion. Just today, I was engaged in a Facebook discussion where I questioned the veracity of a report produced by an organization that I'd never heard of. And I haven't gotten to the bottom of that yet, but there's a lot of stuff on the web that's just plain false. It's fabrications. It's made up stuff. And I think we should all be alert to that.
I was reading an article about that phenomenon recently, and I guess I naively was sort of thinking, Why would people do that, these fake news sites, which could be from the left or the right or just out there somewhere? Why would people do that? And, of course, the answer is really obvious, is that these headlines that are described as clickbait want people to click onto a website. And if you have a website that is advertiser-supported and you get a lot of clicks, or if it ultimately goes viral, then you can make a lot of money doing it. And so the rationale for it is strictly commercial, strictly to make money, it seems. And so I don't know if there's any way to address that. You can send people to fact-checking sites of various kinds, but then that just sort of begs the question of whether the fact-checking sources themselves are reliable. And some people, if they go to a fact-checking source, they may say, well, obviously this is not correct because these people are biased or rigged, to use the term. Let's go to our next caller here and say hello to William from Wilmington. William, you're welcome to hey. WHQR.
How are you guys doing today?
We're fine.
Comment is, as an unaffiliated voter who supported Bernie Sanders, I think that, you know, your caller talking about bringing those voters back into the coalition for Democrats, I think it's a much deeper issue. And how do you think that the Democratic Party is going to be able to overcome the corruption that Hillary Clinton and the DNC used to squash out Bernie Sanders instead of listening to the people? I'll take comments and answers off the air. Thank you.
Okay. Can I ask you a question, though, William?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you said you were a Bernie supporter.
I was.
Is that right? Do you mind telling us whether you voted in this election, and if so, did you vote for Hillary or someone else?
I did. I voted for Donald Trump because I couldn't bear to vote for someone who had used corruption to squash out what seemed to be was the voice of the people. And, you know, Hillary didn't seem that she could accept the results of what the people's voice was, and I couldn't vote for that.
All right. William, thank you very much for your call. We appreciate it. And that was William from Wilmington. Richard Poole from the Democratic Party. What do you think about that? Was that did you see evidence of that Bernie supporters might have been disillusioned with the process this time?
Oh, sure. Many of them are my friends, and many of them have become my friends in the course of this presidential campaign. And there's a deep suspicion among them that, the primary process was unfair. And at the convention, the DNC agreed to make changes in that process that Sanders supporters asked for. And it is important that we be perceived as having a fair and open process. And we need to keep working on that. With that said, Hillary Clinton received a lot more votes in that primary than Bernie Sanders did, millions more. And it's hard to overlook that.
A lot of the focus of the anger from the Bernie supporters was on the process of superdelegates. But there were also, as you say, other delegates who were elected through a normal primary process. We have a caller on the line, and I'm not certain what the name of this caller is, but if you can hear me, caller, go ahead with your question or comment.
Yes, my name's David from Wilmington, North Carolina, and I was just mentioning about the perception that the media is liberally biased, and a lot of the irony is that a lot of the media feels like they're not, but the reality is a lot of Americans, and I would say the majority of Americans, believe that they are, and that's perception. And so I think the media has to come to grips with that and understand that everyone has a bias, and to be able to come to grips with the fact that people really feel that the media not just is biased, but extremely liberally biased. And I think the media just needs to come to grips with that and address that to the American people.
How would you imagine them addressing that? I mean, what would the media do? What should they do? Are you talking about?
I think they could really come to grips with their own bias and try to report things more objectively. Because right now, I mean, you look at MSNBC, CNN, ABC, CBS. And, you know, I have a certain political bent, but I can tell you I'm a very objective person. And I can tell you that they're biased. They may be blind to the of their own biased nature. And so I think they need to kind of come to grips with that, because if not, they're going to be out of business. Because that's a lot of this the votes that Donald Trump got was because people feel that the media, they're biased. And I think they need to try to really kind of reassess, you know, how they're reporting the news, how they're reporting, you know, political events and so on and so forth.
Okay, David, thanks very much for your comment. We've got another caller coming up that we want to get on before this program is over, but we appreciate it. And we're going to say hello to Jim from Wilmington. Jim, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Thank you, gentlemen. I'm going to change this just slightly. My comment here is that if I look at the national election and I look at how Mr. Trump won, Mr. Trump did this by going out into the rural parts of the country. There, you know, when I see what the Democratic Party politicians have done, the level of attention they paid to the rural parts of the country, rural North Carolina, has been very little. When I watched the campaigns being done, I saw Ms. Clinton, certainly the bigger cities, big rural areas, urban areas of the state, but I saw Donald Trump in Hickory. I saw Donald Trump in Smithfield. I saw Donald Trump in places that most politicians don't even know on the map. And that's what carried it. So when I say this to the Democratic Party, we were once the party of the people of the state. And that meant we were the party of the farmers, the workers.
Okay, Jim, I'm sorry. I'm going to have to interrupt you because we only have about 1 minute to go. But thank you. Thank you very much for your comment. And I think that's actually going to have to do it for this edition of Coastline. My guests today have been Michael Franklin, chair of the New Hanover County Republican Party. He was our guest in the first two segments of the program. And Richard Poole, chair of the New Hanover County Democratic Party. Thank you, Michael, for being here.
Thanks. It's been a
pleasure.
Thank you,
Richard. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Copy and paste. You know, I'm sorry. Join us tomorrow for another edition of Coastline, this one for Declining Trust in the Media, with your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. And join Rachel next week at this time for another Wednesday edition of Coastline. Coastline's producer is Isabel Shepherd, and our phone screener and Twitter wrangler today was Libby Kane. Ken Campbell was our audio engineer. I'm Cleve Callison. I'm executive producer of Coastline. Thank you for listening to this broadcast on WHQR Wilmington, 91.3 FM, 98.9 in Myrtle Beach, and 94.1 in Lumberton. Join us next time for Coastline.